Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang, where we will be diving once again into the beautiful and sweet ocean called the Bhagavata Vahini. As summed up so beautifully in that little piece as we began the segment, today we will go into some of the intricate details of the Krishna Avatar. As Swami's devotees, it becomes very difficult for us not to think about Swami when we read about the Krishna Avatar, because the resemblances, the similarities are striking and innumerable, including the top speciality of the Krishna Avatar, which is not the miracles, not the amazing feats, not the superhuman strength, because as we have discussed in several weeks that have preceded this Bhagavata Vahini Satsang, there have been many, many avatars, Amshavatars, or even other avatars like Rama, Narasimha, Parashurama, who have exhibited this strength and the ability to do supra-worldly miracles. Now, though every avatar has powers to do these supra-worldly miracles, the speciality of the Krishna avatar was the attraction, Karshana Shakti. That is there in the name itself, Krishna, Karshayati iti Krishnaha, one who attracts. A gentle smile there, a tender touch here, that was enough to make one go into a blissful trance. All those who are steeped in worldly pursuits, in the pleasures of the senses, they would get transported into a blissful trance by his smile and touch. But then, even those yogis who had mastered all the senses and were beyond the mind, they too would go into this kind of a blissful trance. That is the speciality of the Krishna Avatar. That is the attraction of the Krishna Avatar. And it is natural that the Bhagavata is predominantly about the Krishna Avatar. And that is what we will be diving into today, offering our most humble pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Swami, who reminds us so much of the Krishna Avatar, and offering our pranams at the lotus feet of Bhagavan Krishna, who reminds us so much of the Sai Avatar. We would begin, and let's begin by welcoming Brother Prem. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind. Today we're going to speak about one particular episode which is very characteristic of whatever the explanation or whatever the introduction that you gave. Because when we say that Krishna attracts, Swami would often say this: to be attracted by God, you should be a magnet. You should be an iron filing which does not have dust covering it. Right? And we often think of it as someone who is a good person or a devoted person or in our own limited understanding, an emotional person. But the beauty of the Krishna avatar is he attracts not just those who are emotionally bound or emotionally can be drawn by the Lord. I think most of us are like that. It's very easy to emotionally draw us. But what about those whom we often refer to as a yogi, right? A person who is a yogi is somebody who is not given to the pulls of the emotions, who cannot be easily pleased. In fact, you can even put it that way, because he does not have the small desires, he does not have small things to get fulfilled. It's very difficult to please a yogi. But even such a yogi can be attracted. And one of the examples of that is, of course, Sukha Maharshi himself. We spoke so many times about him, how when he was born, at the moment of birth itself, he walks away taking sannyas. And such is the level of his renunciation. And we see over and over again, as Swami writes in the Bhagavad Vaini, at many, many points, he is lost in samadhi. He is not able to proceed in the narration because he is lost in the bliss of imagining and recollecting Krishna's form and Krishna's leelas. So that is the nature of this avatar of Krishna. And of course, we are going to speak about one more character who was like that, who was drawn to Krishna very, very dearly, but he was also a person who was intellectually very, very evolved. But before that, we'll come back to a few stories. I think, in a sense, for those of our listeners who are listening to us regularly, we are going a little back and forth in chronology. Because
as per the Bhagavata Vahini,
Bhagavata Vahini and as per the Bhagavatam itself, because we did a little thematic in the past few weeks. I think last week we spoke about all the Amshavatars, which Swami mentions but does not go into the details. We spoke about a few. The couple of weeks before that, we spoke about the various Asuras who were killed. And in the process of killing the Asuras, we went right till Mathura, but actually Krishna is still in Vrindavan. So in that sense, we're going to come back to Vrindavan and probably again go to Mathura. It's not a linear narration in that sense. But of course, what does it matter? As Swami would say, that it's all about being lost in the bliss of listening to the stories. Time does not matter at all. Swami would often say this, you know, because we are so obsessed with time and history and facts. Swami would say, it doesn't matter at all. I think the other day when we were discussing, I was sharing that incident which one of our teachers were sharing. When in the interview, they asked Swami this question. You know, I think they were referring to one of the kings, Vikramaditya or somebody, according to history. Because many of these kings, it's very difficult to place them in time because there are records of them and a few hundred years back. But some scriptures which are older than that also make references to them.
And even people who have documented about these kings, it was not as if like the whole world at that point in time followed one particular way of calendars or time or years.
Right.
There were different calendars. There's a Mauryan calendar, a Shakan calendar. Now, in order to get uniformity across calendars is also difficult. So therefore, it definitely becomes tough.
Right. So I think in that context, they were asking about this particular king and they were saying which era did he actually belong to? And Swami said, you know, it doesn't really matter. See, when these kings are made reference to, and invariably we see that in all our folklore and the stories which are passed on, it's always to pass on a moral precept. It's always to say that, you know, this is how a person should behave, this is how one person should conduct himself. So Swami would say, actually the time doesn't matter, it's only the essence of the story, the moral of the story which matters. And that is why even historically some of these things are not recorded so diligently as we would probably expect them. And Swami was saying, and then Swami was also saying that some of these names are titles. They're not names of one particular person. And we know that even Krishna Devaraya, there are so many references of Krishna Devaraya. There are so many references of Vikramaditya again. So Swami was saying many of these are titles, and we were speaking about Kapila last time around. And we were saying that how there are multiple sages with the name Kapila who occur in different scriptures. So Swami was saying that, you know, don't get too caught up with all these time and chronology and history and all that. And even as they were speaking, Swami, I mean, it was an interview with a few of the teachers who were teaching in Swami's college then. And suddenly Swami looked up at the clock, and I think either the clock chimed or the bhajan started, something like that. And Swami was a little startled. He said, hey, it's already time for bhajans. Then Swami said, did you realize 40 minutes passed away? And everybody looked at each other because none of them felt the passing of time because they were so lost in that company of Swami. And Swami said, see, this is what happens. When your mind is actually occupied with something so much more superior, time actually does not matter. just like how you experienced it right now, Swami said. You know, that is what Albert Einstein speaks of, you know, when he talks of the theory of relativity. He gives that beautiful analogy of sitting next to a pretty girl and sitting on a hot stove. So Swami is saying that's what, when your mind is contemplating something so much more superior and noble, time actually just vanishes off. It is no more as relevant as you think it is. And in that sense, it doesn't matter whether we're going back and forth chronologically in the narrative, as long as you're lost in that.
No, it's interesting because when you look at all the yogis and people who are lost in meditation, whomever we have written records about, even in the modern age, we see that they seem to be extremely fit and healthy even at very advanced ages. Even at 80, 90, they're extremely fit. And one cannot rule out the possibility that, you know, they are in a different kind of time zone or a time frame, because our bodies might age and by the time we are 70, we are old and decrepit. But that might not be happening to them when they are at 70. In fact, modern science also, I think there is a thought experiment, which again is connected with Einstein, wherein if you have twins, you send one twin into a spacecraft and let him travel at the speed of light. And if he comes back after 10 years, he'll still be young while the person, the twin on Earth, would have aged. Now, though there's no way to actually carry out this experiment, to some extent they have observed this time dilation and time shrinking happening when it comes to space travel, because though it doesn't travel anywhere close to the speed of light, spaceships do travel among the fastest things that man has ever made, among them.
Interestingly, there's so many stories in the mythology which actually talk of such incidents. I don't know, I think in the beginning of Bhagavatam also one story comes where a king goes to fight on behalf of the devas, and he comes back 200, 300 years later
to the earth,
right?
Correct.
And one of his somebody in his lineage is actually ruling the same kingdom, where he is looking younger than the person who's supposed to be his great grandson or something like that.
Yes, so that is the kind of time. I mean, we have observed it to in our own limited way in the same afternoon satsang itself. Like if I tell you that now we are almost 20 minutes into the satsang, at least for us both, it is like, wow, 20 minutes are already over, because we are not yet finished introducing the theme. So that is the beauty of something that's able to capture our mind. And when it comes to capturing the mind, nothing is better than Krishna, because that name is so sweet, the form is so sweet. You know, recently one of my classmates, he had been through this Vipassana meditation course, and he was saying that it's an amazing experience, because for 10 days you're cut off, you know, your mobile phones, all your gadgets are taken away, and the whole day you only meditate. You're given your breakfast, lunch and dinner, and rest of it, it's like 12 to 14 hours per day of meditation. And he said it was a refreshing exercise. So I asked him, so do you think you're spiritually grown? He says, I don't know about that, but I feel so much more nice and good. So I said, that's all nice. So it's all positive. Were there any negatives? He said, no, you know, I had one problem. He said, there, you know, you meditate on shunyam. You meditate on nothingness. So it is so difficult. He said, it is so difficult to meditate on nothing, you know. You have to make your head devoid of everything. It's like you have to create a vacuum. It becomes so difficult. And he was saying that everybody is given a master, a teacher, and he kept confessing, and the teacher said, no, keep trying, keep doing and all that. He said, no, that was very difficult. Interestingly, the same day, you know, when we were sitting and discussing in the studio, we came across a beautiful discourse by Bhagwan, reading which, you know, it thrilled him, because, you know, in that discourse, Swami says that it is very difficult to meditate on nothing. And you know, Swami also speaks about the difficulties while meditation. Swami uses the analogy of learning to ride a bicycle. Mm-hmm. Swami says that when you're trying to ride a bicycle, you keep falling down. You fall to the right, then you try to make a correction, then you lose balance and fall to the left. Days pass like this and you have not made any progress at all. You're still as good as you were in the beginning. Swami says meditation is like that. You know, you'll keep putting efforts, but it looks like you're just not achieving it. You've just not made any progress. Then Swami says, but one day you will get your balance. And once you get that balance, no, Swami says you can drive through the most crowded bazaar without losing balance. Years later, you can pick up a cycle and ride, and you will still not lose your balance. And Swami says that's how meditation is. Once you master it, that's it, it's done, it's mastered. And then Swami beautifully says that you need a name and the form. Just like you have two handlebars on a cycle to achieve balance, to achieve your balance in meditation, you need one handlebar of the name, one of the form. Swami says, focus all your attention on the name. And when the attention from the name is wavering, turn it to the form. And when it's wavering from the form, turn it to the name. In this way, you know, you make it shuttle between the name and the form, just like you use the two handlebars in the bicycle, and you achieve that state of perfect meditation. Now, when I read it, it was very thrilling intellectually, but this friend of mine, this classmate of mine who had been through at least 10 days of intense meditation, he was like delighted, he was elated, and he said that this is so true. I mean, this is the key that unlocks me to go to the next stage. I feel this is what will give me my progression into the next stage. You know, that was the kind of thrill that he had. And that is when I realized that all these things Swami doled out to all of us, but if we have to benefit by it, we have to. I mean, if 10th grade science theory is taught to me, if I have not progressed up to the 10th grade, I will not be able to appreciate it. Sitting in the 6th grade or sitting in the 2nd grade, the 10th grade thing might look all gibberish or nonsense. Doesn't mean that it is nonsense. It has lot of depth, lot of meaning, and you know, yeah. Coming back to why I started this whole thing. That is why this avatar becomes very special, the Krishna avatar. Because the name is so beautiful, so enchanting, and the form is equally beautiful and enchanting. So that is why, though there are many avatars, though there are many amshavatars, the Krishna avatar, simply because of its ability to attract, becomes so, so very special.
The other day I was listening to a talk by our brother Sonam. He was speaking about, I forgot the name of the guru who had visited Sikkim. He was talking about one great master who had visited Sikkim, very elderly person, I think maybe into his 90s. So he being associated with many people in the government and all that, he was called to take care of that person and, you know, offer hospitality to him. So I think the first time when they met, or when he went to his presence the first time, he went to touch his feet, and the first thing that Guru told him is, don't touch my feet. You have touched the feet of the ultimate. Don't touch my feet, he said. And of course, that was one of the incidents which happened. But later he was saying that they had called for a public gathering, and, you know, a lot of his disciples and all addressed the gathering. They spoke about, he's basically a devotee of Krishna. So finally, when his turn came to speak, you know, they kept a mic for him. Very old person. He was not even able to stand on his own. That sort of very aged. And the mic was given to him. He just said two words. He said, Krishna, Krishna. And he was saying that those words were so magical. Because here is a person who probably for 80 years, 90 years of his life has done nothing but contemplate on that name. He did not have to say anything more than that. The amount of devotion and spirituality, or whatever you want to call that, he conveyed by just telling the names Krishna, Krishna, was so immense that, I mean, literally even the people who are not into the path of spirituality or not devoted to Krishna,
they could feel something.
They could feel that there was something different in those, that utterance. So in that sense, you know, I just recall, even when we talk about Krishna, and as you were saying, it's very difficult to separate living in the presence of Krishna and living in the presence of Swami. Because one thing which Swami used to tell some of these old devotees in the 1940s when they used to come to Swami, they would say that, you know, there is always this fascination to do something. When you are on the spiritual path, you want to do something, right? You want to attach yourself to some form of practice or the other. And that temptation will always be there, but Swami would tell them that, no, you don't need anything like that. You don't have to do any meditation. You don't have to do this. Because in many ways, that which can be got by madly falling in love with a form which comes in, like Swami or Krishna, is unparalleled. You cannot quantify it in terms of, you know, how many thousand times you've done japam, how many times. But at the same time, there was a very beautiful letter I came across which Swami had written to the students, you know, in which he says, you take up some form of spirituality, some form of sadhana. Swami is writing in the letter. But the beautiful thing is, Swami says, so that you will be able to love this form better. Swami said, keep that as the goal, not spiritual progress as the goal. keep it as a way by which you purify yourself so that you will be able to love Swami better.
And you know, when you say about loving Swami better, again, as you say, Swami Krishna inseparable, the benefits that actually accrue by simply loving that name and form can be seen best possibly in the lives of the Gopikas and the Gopalas, Vrindavan. Because they were possibly one of the first to get attracted, to feel this Karshana that Krishna embodies, and they got attracted to the name and form of Krishna, especially the form of Krishna, and they had a kind of mad love in their hearts for that beauty that they saw. That love was inexplicable, and that is the only thing they had. And as we shall see in today's satsang session, as we go through this chapter in the Bhagavata Vahini, that love alone was sufficient, that prema was enough to grant them everything that can possibly got through the karma marga, bhakti jnana marga or the jnana marga. And it is possibly in order to highlight their love for, the magic of their love for Krishna, that Krishna decides to send Uddhava to Vrindavan. Story goes that when Krishna left Vrindavan, you know, that is when he went to Mathura, and we had spoken about how he killed Kamsa, Chanura, everything, and after that, Krishna settled down in Mathura. So all the Gopikas were, you know, left pining for Krishna. And they were pining for the form of Krishna, they wanted Krishna so badly. That is when Krishna decides to send Uddhava. Now, who is this Uddhava? Uddhava is actually the cousin of Krishna. He is the son of Devabhaga. Devabhaga is the brother of Vasudeva. Vasudeva is Krishna's father. So he is Krishna's first cousin. And he is a very intellectually accomplished person. He has read everything. He has got great knowledge. And actually, this Uddhava, when he sees that Krishna is constantly thinking about the Gopikas and the Gopalas, and he comes to know that Krishna is thinking about them because they are thinking of him and missing him, he feels that he would like to help these Gopikas and Gopalas. And that is when he approaches Krishna and he says, why don't I go and help them? And Krishna's master plan it is, he knows what is going to happen and he knows who needs what. You know, this is something that I firmly believe in my life. Whenever we meet anybody in our life, however accidentally it might be, it has been designed by Swami for each one of us. Because whomever I am meeting, I have got something to gain from that person, and that person has got something to gain from me. There is a transaction, there is an exchange that has to take place, and that is why that situation has been created. If there was nothing, Swami would not have created that situation in my life at all. So it is the same thing here. While on one hand, it is Krishna's knowledge that the Gopikas and the Gopalas are going to receive something from Uddhava, he knows for sure that Uddhava is also going to receive so much from the Gopikas and the Gopalas. And that is why Krishna agrees for Uddhava to go. It's a tough decision for Uddhava because Uddhava is very, very attached to Krishna. But still he feels that, you know, that is his expression of love. He feels that, let me do something for Krishna that will assuage Krishna's heart. And so for that sake, he is ready to give up the presence of Krishna. He decides to go one day to Vrindavana, Gokula, and, you know, console and cajole all the Gopikas and Gopalas and return. I think that is a beautiful episode we will be going into today. We have got lots to learn from that.
Absolutely, because one description of Uddhava himself is, he is supposed to be a jnani. He is supposed to be one who is established in the oneness of all creation. Of course, that one part of him is he is very, very attached to Krishna because he is brought up from childhood like that. There is a, you know, the stories of the Bhagavatam say that he is brought up like Krishna himself. He dresses up like Krishna. He would do, you know, he also goes to, I think, Sandipani Ashram along with Balrama and Krishna. And whatever Krishna did, he does. That's how even in Mathura, he is like, you know, just the other example for Sakya Bhakti is actually Uddhava, who is always with Krishna. And that is why he is actually attached to Krishna. But that attachment apart, he is supposed to be somebody who is very established in that, you know, the study of Advaita and all that. So I think that is one of the reasons why he is saying that you know, why is even Krishna going on thinking of these Gopalas and Gopis? You know, you can understand them probably pining because they're after all illiterate. And there are so many versions of this story. One of the things they say is Krishna actually writes a letter and sends it to them. But none of them actually can read. But still Krishna writes a letter, and they say one of the responses they see in the gopis is they tear up the letter because they don't know what to read, but they start valuing the letter because it was written by Krishna. And then, of course, the discourse with Uddhava proceeds to give them. But as you're saying, you know, it is not that the gopis did not get anything from Uddhava going there, because for a devotee to be informed that the Lord is thinking of you, is there is no greater joy and there's no greater confirmation than that.
If not anything, they got the letter.
Right. If not anything, I mean, the very fact that Krishna was thinking of them, you know, or I mean, how many times we have felt that, you know, Swami might not speak to us, Swami might not be looking at us.
But he makes a reference to us in the interview room.
In the interview room or while speaking to the Vaishnava, that is enough. For 3 days, we'll be floating. Right. And that is the thing. I mean, they get their share of that joy through Uddhava's coming. But of course, what the person to gain maximum is Uddhava, because, you know, many times it happens when you learn so much, you've gathered all the knowledge, but there's just that something missing, that one bit. Many times, even when you're studying a subject, that's what happens. You know, you know everything, but there's one final clinching concept which is missing somewhere. Once you get that, everything seems to fall in place.
It's like the salt in dishes, I feel, you know. You might have all the vegetables, all the masala, everything put. But if there's no salt, you know, it is salt that ensures, I mean, I'm talking about salty dishes, of course, not the sweets. But it is the salt that ensures that you get the taste and enjoyment of everything else. Because if everything else is there but salt is missing, you're not able to enjoy it. But even if just salt is there and nothing else is there, that is still enjoyable. You know, for example, we make buttermilk only with salt. So I feel that is that salt that was missing in Uddhava's life. So while he went with all the vegetables and rice grains and everything to the gopikas were going to give him salt. So this is something wonderful that happened there. And dear listeners, we would not like to actually describe in our words, because we have got Swami's words. In many discourses, on many occasions, especially the Krishna Janmashtami days, Swami would narrate this episode. One such narration is over here. It is taken from Bhagwan's discourse, and Swami goes into details of how Uddhava goes to Gokula and what happens there. We listen to that, and then we shall take forward this discussion.
This at one time,
message tiskunu vachadu Krishna nunchi Gopikala dagariki Uddhavudu.
Uddhava brought a message from Krishna to Gopikas.
Kani aa message ni evvariki andinchadaniki veeli kaakapoyindi.
It was not possible to hand over this message to anyone.
Gokulamulo undinatvanti gopikalu gopalulu Krishnuni yokka premanu manasulo hattukoni poyinatvanti varu.
The love of Krishna is imprinted on the hearts of our boys.
Upanishattulu vedantamulu yogamulu anni telusukunnatvanti vaadu ee yokka Bantu.
Uddhava is an expert in all sacred texts and also yoga chastra.
Uddhavudu Krishnudu daggarane cheppadu, Swami, chaduvu sandhyalu lenatundi vaadu murkulu ee gopikalu.
Uddhava said, oh Swami Krishna, the gopikas are illiterate.
Bhagavad Gita ye matram kudanu artham chesukoleru.
They don't understand the principle of divinity.
Alanti vaariki tamaru aagnishte nenu akkadiki poyi oka yogamunu bodhimpajesi tadvara tama yokka sakshat swaroopanni vaadu tappaka kaliginchestanu annadu.
Oh Lord, if you permit me, I will go over there and teach this yoga shastra to those gopikas to experience the divinity.
Aithe Krishnudu pampadantene aa gopikalu ostaru kaani inkevaru pampinaranna raaru.
Gopikas will respond if only I am sent by you, not by anybody.
Vaallaki emiti ye devudu ledu.
They have no other god.
Brahma vachadu unnaru, Brahma mem chudaledu.
Brahma appeared, they said, we have not
Vishnu
seen Brahma.
Vachadu, mem chudaledu Vishnu.
Vishnu came there, we have not seen him before.
Shivudu vachadu, mem chudaledu Shivudu.
Shiva, we never met him earlier.
Chudanatvanti dani paina ye reetiga mem lagnam gavinchedi maa manasu.
How can I concentrate my mind on that I have
Chuchinadu
not met?
Okkade Krishnudu.
We have seen only one Krishna.
Atani yokka shakti samarthyam anubhavinchindi aa okkani dwaraane.
We could enjoy his power and capacity.
Kanaka maaku Krishnudu tappa anyam maaku akkarledu.
Excepting Krishna, we don't want anyone.
Kanukane Krishnuni ఎవరు పోయినప్పటికీ అలవ్ చేసేటువంటి వారు కాదు కృష్ణుని యొక్క భక్తికి.
సో దే నెవర్ అలౌడ్ ఎనీవన్ ఎల్స్ టు స్టెప్ ఇన్ దేర్.
కృష్ణ, ఇంత చీటీ రాసివ్వండి, మీరు రాసిస్తే కానీ వారు నన్ను ప్రవేశపెట్టారు, లేకపోతే నన్ను అక్కడ ప్రవేశింపచేయరు అన్నాడు.
ఉద్ధవ సెట్, కృష్ణ గివ్ మీ స్మాల్ చిట్ సో దట్ ఐ విల్ బి పర్మిటెడ్ టు ఎంటర్.
రాసి ఇచ్చాడు.
హీ గేవ్ దట్ చిట్.
ప్రియమైన గోపికలారా,
డియర్ గోపికాస్,
నా మిత్రుడు పరమమిత్రుడైనటువంటి
మై ఇంటిమేట్ ఫ్రెండ్
ఉద్ధవుడు ఈ చీటిని తీసుకుని వస్తున్నాడు, అతని యొక్క ఆదేశాన్ని మీరు అనుసరించండి.
ద బేరర్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ చిట్ ఈస్ మై ఇంటిమేట్ ఫ్రెండ్ ఉద్ధవ, ఫాలో హిస్ కమాండ్.
తెచ్చి చూపించారు.
హీ బ్రాట్ ఇట్ అండ్ హీ షోన్.
కృష్ణుని యొక్క రథంలోనే వచ్చాడు ఈ ఉద్ధవుడు.
ఇన్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ హీ ట్రావెల్డ్ ఇన్ ద సేమ్
క్యారియర్. మరింత మోసమైపోయింది.
సో దేవర్ డిసీవ్
ఆ రథం వచ్చింది, యశోద ఇంటి ముందు నిలిచింది.
అండ్ ద చారియట్ స్టూడ్ ఇన్ ఫ్రంట్ ఆఫ్ ద రెసిడెంట్ ఆఫ్ యశోద.
ఏ ఆహ్వానం లేకపోయినప్పటికీ గోపికలు అందరూ పరిగెత్తి వచ్చారు యశోద ఇంటికి.
థింకింగ్ దట్ కృష్ణ అరైవ్డ్ ఆల్ గోపికాస్ అసెంబ్లెడ్ దేర్.
కృష్ణుడు ఎక్కడ, కృష్ణుడు ఎక్కడ, కృష్ణుడు ఎక్కడ.
దే వర్ జస్ట్ వాచింగ్ వేర్ కృష్ణ ఇస్.
రాత్రిం పగలు కన్నులు కాయలు కాచేటట్టుగా కూడా చూస్తూ చూస్తూ నిరాశ పడ్డారు.
డే అండ్ నైట్ దేవర్ వెయిటింగ్ అండ్ వెయిటింగ్.
మధురకు వెళ్లినటువంటి కృష్ణుడు మరికి ఒక్క క్షణమైన కూడాను బృందావనం రాలేదు.
ద మూమెంట్ హీ హస్ గాన్ ఓవర్ దేర్ టు మధుర, హీ హస్ నాట్ కమ్ బ్యాక్ టు బృందావన్.
నిరాశకు గురి అయ్యారు.
దేవర్ డిసప్పాయింటెడ్.
నిస్పృహను పొందారు.
దేవర్ ఫ్రస్ట్రేటెడ్.
ఏ విధమైనటువంటి ఒక శక్తిని కోల్పోయారు.
దే లాస్ట్ ఆల్ దేర్ ఎనర్జీ.
ఆనందంగా పరిగెత్తారు.
బట్ హౌఎవర్ దే వర్ రన్నింగ్ ఇన్ జాయ్ ఎక్స్పెక్టింగ్ కృష్ణ.
చూపించారు చీటీని.
అండ్ ద చిట్ వాస్ షోన్ టు దెం. ఉద్ధవ హస్ గివెన్ ద చిట్.
కృష్ణుడు పంపించాడు చీటీని.
దిస్ చిట్ ఈస్ గివెన్ టు మీ బై కృష్ణ.
ఒక గోపిక చెప్పింది.
వన్ గోపిక సెడ్,
ఉద్ధవ
ఉద్ధవ,
మేము గోపికలము, పల్లెపడుచులము.
వీఆర్ గోపికస్, ది విలేజ్ గర్ల్స్.
మాకు ఈ చదువులు సంధ్యలు మాకు రావు.
వీ డోంట్ హ్యావ్ ఎనీ ఫార్మల్.
మా తల్లిదండ్రులు ఏ పాఠశాలకు మమ్మల్ని పంపలేదు.
వీఆర్ నాట్ సెంట్ టు ఎనీ స్కూలింగ్ బై అవర్ పేరెంట్స్.
ఓనామాలు కూడా మాకు తెలియదు.
వీ డోంట్ నో ఎనీ లెటర్స్.
అంత మూర్ఖులమైనటువంటి మేము.
వీఆర్ సో ఫూలిష్. వీ డోంట్
నో. ఏంట్లో విద్యలో మాత్రమే మేము మూర్ఖులము.
వీఆర్ ఫూల్స్ ఓన్లీ ఇన్ మ్యాటర్ ఆఫ్ ఎడ్యుకేషన్.
ఆత్మ విద్య లోపల మేము అమరత్తులము.
బట్ ఇన్ స్పిరిచువల్ నాలెడ్జ్ వీ నో ఎవ్రీథింగ్.
అనేటప్పటికీ ఎవరైనా ఇంతో వంతో చదివిన వారుంటే దీన్ని చూడండి అన్నారు.
ఇఫ్ దేర్ ఆర్ సంబడి హూ నోస్ ఎట్లీస్ట్ సమ్ లెటర్స్, యూ మే గో త్రూ దిస్ చిట్. హీ సెడ్.
ఒక గర్ల్, కొంత అక్షరాలు తెలిసినటువంటి గర్ల్ ఉన్నది.
వన్ గర్ల్ నోస్ లెటర్స్, ది ఆల్ఫబెట్స్.
ఆమెకు అందించాడు.
హీ పాస్ డౌన్ ద చిట్ టు హర్.
ఆమె ముట్టలేదు.
షీ డిడ్ంట్ టచ్ దట్ చిట్.
ఉద్ధవ, నీకు ఒక నమస్కారం.
ఉద్ధవ, ఐ ఆఫర్ మై సెల్యూటేషన్స్ టు యూ.
ఎందువలనగా నాకు అక్షరం తెలుసు. కృష్ణుని దగ్గర నేను ఎన్ని పర్యాయంలో మాట్లాడ్డాను. కృష్ణుని యొక్క హ్యాండ్ రైటింగ్ నాకు బాగా తెలుసు.
ఐ నో కృష్ణ ఇంటిమేట్లీ. ఐ నో హిజ్ హ్యాండ్ రైటింగ్ ఆల్సో.
కానీ
బట్
నేను దానిని ముట్టలేను.
బట్ ఐ డోంట్ టచ్ దట్ చిట్.
ఎందుకు ముట్టకూడదు?
వై డోంట్ యూ టచ్?
కృష్ణ భక్తి ఇంత గొప్పదిగా మీరు భావిస్తున్నారు, విశ్వసిస్తున్నారు, ఆరాధిస్తున్నారు, ఆనందిస్తున్నారు, ఎందుకు దీనిని మీరు ముట్టకూడదు?
యు వర్షిప్ కృష్ణ, యు అడోర్ హిమ్, యు సే దట్ యు లవ్ హిమ్, వై డోంట్ యూ టచ్ ది చిట్?
ఉద్ధవ, భక్తి యొక్క ప్రపత్తులు మీకు ఏమాత్రం కూడా అర్థం కాదు.
You cannot understand the levels, altitudes of devotion.
వియోగం చేత మా దేహమంతా మండిపోతుండాలి.
Because of pangs of separation from Krishna, the whole body is burning.
కనుక ఆ జాబును మేము ముట్టేటప్పటికి జాలుకు కాలిపోతుందో ఏమిటో.
If we just touch that chit, it may get burned down.
కనుక కృష్ణుని వ్రాతను మేము భస్మం చేయడం మాకు ఇష్టం లేదు.
సో వీ డోంట్ వాంట్ టు బర్న్ దట్ చిట్ గివెన్ బై కృష్ణ.
ఎంత గొప్ప విచారం వారిది.
దట్ ఈస్ ది లెవెల్ ఆఫ్ దర్ డివోషన్.
నాకు తెలిసిన విద్యాన్ని చక్కగా ఇంకోటి తీసుకుని చక్క చదవచ్చును, కానీ గోపిక ఆ పని చేయలేదు.
బికాస్ ద ఫ్యాక్ట్ దట్ షీ నోస్ ద లెటర్, షీ డి నాట్ పిక్ అప్ ద చిట్ ఇమిడియట్లీ.
మా దేహం నరక పర్యంతం కూడాను కృష్ణుని యొక్క వియోగాగ్ని లోపల మండిపోతుండాలి మా దేహము.
బికాస్ ఆఫ్ సెపరేషన్ ఫ్రమ్ కృష్ణ ద హోల్ బాడీ ఈస్ బర్నింగ్.
ఏది ముట్టినా కూడా అది కాలిపోయే స్థితిలో ఉండాలి.
వాట్ ఎవర్ వు మే టచ్ ఇట్ మే బి బర్న్డ్.
కనుక కృష్ణుని యొక్క ఆ పవిత్రమైనటువంటి సువర్ణ అక్షరములను మేము భస్మం చేయడానికి నాకు ఇష్టం లేదు.
వీ డోంట్ వాంట్ టు బర్న్ పుట్ ఇట్ ఆన్ ఫైర్ ద గోల్డెన్ లెటర్స్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణ.
ఇంకొక గోపికను చూపించారు.
అండ్ ద చిట్ వాస్ గివెన్ టు అనదర్ గోపిక.
ఆ గోపిక చూచింది.
షీ సా దట్.
ఉద్ధవ, మీకు ఒక నమస్కారం.
ఉద్ధవ, వీ రెస్పెక్ట్ యువర్ నమస్కార్స్ టు యూ.
నాకు కూడాను కృష్ణుని యొక్క హ్యాండ్ రైటింగ్ చాలా బాగా తెలుసు.
ఐ ఆమ్ ఆల్సో ఫెమిలియర్ విత్ ది హ్యాండ్ రైటింగ్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణ.
కానీ దాన్ని చదవడానికి నేను ప్రయత్నం చేస్తే నేను ఈ దుఃఖాన్ని భరించుకోలేను.
ఐ కెనాట్ బేర్ దిస్ సఫరింగ్ ఆర్ గ్రీఫ్ ఎనీ లాంగర్.
నా యొక్క కంటిధారలు ఆ యొక్క జాబు పైన పడి అక్షరములంతా చెదిరిపోతాయి.
As the tears of grief fall on this letter, all letters will be washed out.
అక్షరములంత చెదిరిపోయిన తర్వాత నేను ఏ రీతిగా చదవాలి?
Well, when all the letters are not there, how can I read them?
కనుక నేను దానిని చదవను.
So I cannot read it.
కడపటికి ఉద్ధవుడే చదివాడు.
Then Uddhava read it himself.
చదివింది మూడే అక్షరాలు.
Only three sentence lines he read.
ఓ ప్రియమైన గోపికలారా,
ఓ డియర్ గోపికాస్,
నా ప్రియమిత్రుడైనటువంటి ఉద్ధవుని పంపుతాను, అతని ఆదేశాన్ని అనుసరించండి.
ఐఎమ్ సెండింగ్ మై ఇంటిమేట్ ఫ్రెండ్ ఉద్ధవ, ఫాలో హిస్ కమాండ్.
ఇంతే చదివాడు.
దట్స్ ఆల్.
ఇంత మాత్రానికి మేము ఇంకెందుకు వెళ్లిపోతామని వెళ్లారు.
ఓన్లీ టు దిస్ ఎక్స్టెంట్ yes, better we go, they said.
విద్ధవుణ్ణి ఒక్కరైనా కూడా కన్నెత్తి చూడలేదు.
నాట్ ఈవెన్ వన్ గోపిక స్టేర్డ్ ఆర్ లుక్డ్ ఎట్ ఉద్ధవ.
కృష్ణుణ్ణి చూచినటువంటి కన్నులు మరొక పురుషుణ్ణి చూడకూడదు.
ఐస్ దట్ హావ్ సీన్ కృష్ణ ఆర్ నాట్ ప్రిపేర్డ్ టు లుక్ ఎట్ ఎనీబడీ.
కన్నులు డిగ్రుడ్డులై కళ్యాణకరమైన నీ మూర్తి దర్శింప నేరరైరి.
దో దే ఆర్ గిఫ్టెడ్ విత్ బ్యూటిఫుల్ ఐస్, దే ఆర్ నాట్ ఏబుల్ టు వాచ్ దట్ ఫార్ డివైన్ ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ స్ప్లెండర్ అండ్ గ్రాండియర్ బికాస్ దే ఆర్ బ్లైండ్.
చెవటులై అతి మనోహరమైన నీ గానమాలింప నేరరైరి.
Gifted with ears, yet they are not able to listen to the melodious music of the divine.
Pani pankajamandu paramatma undiyu paadu samsarambu korirairi.
Though there is God available to confer blessing, but you only want worldly desire, the family.
Yanta duradrushtavantulo.
How unfortunate you are.
Yemi telupu.
What is to be conveyed?
ఇంత దురదృష్టవంతులకు ఏమని తెలపాలి?
టు దీస్ అన్లక్కీ పీపుల్ వాట్ ఇస్ టు బి కన్వేడ్
అని వారు విచారం చేస్తూ పోతూ వచ్చారు.
దే వర్ జస్ట్ థింకింగ్ ఇన్ దిస్ డైరెక్షన్.
కట్టగడపటికి అమ్మా, నా ఒక్క యోగక్షేమాన్నైనా కూడా విచారించి మీరు చూడండి అన్నాడు.
హీ సెడ్ ఓ గోపికాస్ అట్లీస్ట్ ఫైండ్ అవుట్ ద వెల్ఫేర్ అట్లీస్ట్.
ఉద్ధవ, నీకు అనేక మనసులు ఉండవచ్చును.
ఉద్ధవ, యు మే హ్యావ్ మెనీ మైండ్స్.
మా గోపికలకు ఉన్నది ఒకే మనసు, ఒకే మనసు.
బట్ గోపికాస్ వీ హ్యావ్ ఓన్లీ సింగిల్ మైండ్.
అదే కృష్ణుని యొక్క మనసు.
దట్ ఈస్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణాస్.
ఆ మనసు కూడా ఇప్పుడు ఇక్కడ లేదు.
ఈవెన్ దట్ మైండ్ ఈస్ నాట్ విత్ అస్.
కృష్ణునితో పాటు మధురకు పోయింది.
ఇట్ హాస్ ఫాలోడ్ కృష్ణ టు మధుర.
ప్రపంచంలో ఉన్నటువంటి విషయాలంతా కూడా కేవలం తల లోపల కూరి 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 తల పగిలిపోయేటట్టుగా ఈ యొక్క విద్యలంతా చేర్చుకుంటున్నారు.
All this education, the worldly knowledge in the physical matter is stuffed into the head completely.
ఏ అమెరికా లోదో, ఏ జపాన్ లోదో, ఏ జర్మనీ లోదో, ఏ ఆఫ్రికా దో, ఏ దీంతో అన్ని చింతలు తెచ్చి తలల్లో చేర్చుకుంటున్నారు.
All those matters related to America, Japan, Germany are stuffed into the head.
దీనికోసం ఈ తల ఇచ్చింది.
Is it for that reason the head is gifted?
ఏమి లేని బుర్రలోన ఏమైనా చేర్చవచ్చు.
When the head is empty, you can stuff it with anything.
ఏమేమో నిండి ఉన్నా తలబుర్రది ఖాళీయగునా.
The head which is fully of that matter, unless it is empty, you cannot add anything.
Kali kaka ila sukritam nimpanaguna.
Unless it is empty, you cannot fill it up with the spiritual knowledge.
ఇది కాదు మన తలలో నింపుకోవాల్సినటువంటిది.
ఆల్ దిస్ నాట్ ద వరల్డ్ నాలెడ్జ్.
చదవలసింది చదవలసిందే.
Yes, we should study.
ఆ చదవలసినటువంటి దాంట్లో ఏది అవసరమైందో దాన్ని మాత్రం పెట్టుకోవాలి.
బట్ వీ షుడ్ ట్రెజర్ దాట్ విచ్ ఇస్ నెససరీ.
దట్ వాస్ ద క్లిప్ ఆఫ్ I think it's from a discourse that Swami delivered in 96. The end of that particular part which Swami said, I think Swami has even written that episode even in dramas which has been staged in front of Swami. Swami has written in beautiful Telugu. That last part especially, when Swami says, the Gopikas tell Uddhava that we have only one heart, we have only one mind, and we have given it to Krishna. I think last year sometime, one of our colleagues, Sai Prakash, now he was telling, he was in Mathura, Vrindavan. He was in Delhi at that time he visited.
Mm-hmm.
So he was saying, it's actually quite surprising. Not sure if that is how the towns and cities were in the time of Krishna. But actually, Vrindavan and Mathura are not very far away. They're almost separated just by the river Yamuna. It's not at all far away. I mean, if they had wanted to go, they could have gone. It's almost like, you know, this is Krishna's will. He has moved away. And, you know, we will either wait till he comes back or we'll fill our lives with this absence or with this pining. I think that is the essence of the bhakti of Gopikas. You know, when we talk of Swami, when we talk...
Oh, it is not like it was thousands of miles away
right,
from...
It's not like it was beyond their ability to go there or go in search of Krishna. I mean, imagine if all the Gopikas had landed up in the palace in Mathura. You think Krishna would have told them, don't let them inside, I don't know who they are. I mean, you would have loved to go and meet them, right? But it was just that acceptance of Krishna's will and, you know, if not Krishna, we'll go for somebody else or we'll look for somewhere else. You know, there's that very beautiful incident which our controller of examinations, Sanjay Sani sir, would narrate. Apparently, once in one of the tri sessions, Swami said this. You know, so many people come to Swami. People come to Swami because they want education. People come to Swami because they want to have their children's marriage performed or somebody is not well. Swami says, I bless all of them. I give them whatever they want. But they take it and they go away. Swami said, who comes to Swami for Swami? Right? And if you look at it, you know, there are so many people who come to Swami who are very, very devoted. I mean, there's nothing to take away from them to belittle their devotion. But the moment you have something for which you come to Swami, when it is not available here, you look somewhere else. And I think that is the problem with most of us. You know, it could be the most noblest of things. You could come here as a spiritual aspirant saying that I want spiritual progress. Then you'll turn around and say, okay, I can, that discourse seems to be more attractive. This Guruji seems to be putting it across better. And I think that's why that letter which I made a reference to, Swami said, do some spiritual practice, you know, take up some sadhana. But the goal of that sadhana should not be progress. To be able to love Swami better. To be able to be drawn to Swami better. And I think that is what the Gopikas were exhibiting. Where Uddhava might be coming with the message from Krishna himself, saying that, you know, I am the, to put it in with a lack of better words, I am the medium. You know, I have the message. So they say, we don't need it because Krishna has left us with the emptiness. We will fill our life with this emptiness. And, you know, that is the message actually not for anybody else, but for Uddhava himself.
You know, there is this a private magazine, which, not magazine actually, private book, called Heart to Heart, which was released based on all the conversations that Swami has had with the students in the portico during in between darshan and all that. So I happened to possess one of those copies and I was reading through all of them. One conversation was very interesting, you know. All the boys are, I think, somewhere in the 1995 or 1996.
Okay.
Or maybe 1997. So all the boys are getting on their knees and telling Swami, you should come to hostel, Swami, we want you, Swami, and all that. And at that point in time, Swami turns to one of the elders and says, see how these boys are pestering me. They tell that, Swami, come to hostel. I tell them that anyway they see me daily here, why should I go to hostel? So that person is standing there, he's just nodding to whatever Swami says. Then Swami seriously tells him that, you know, put some sense into their heads, knock some sense into their heads, talk to them. And in Swami's presence, he begins to speak. He starts telling them that, Swami...
It's a dangerous trap.
He starts telling them that, see, you're all blessed that you're getting Swami's nearness, physical proximity. But don't get so deluded by that, that you forget his reality. Why do you have to call him to hostel? Do you think he's not there in the hostel? He's there not only in the hostel, he's there in each one of your rooms, he's in your heart. And this is what the person spoke, which as I was reading through felt like perfect sense, you know, he spoke that. The most interesting thing is as he completes this, Swami smiles and says, my dear sir, if that is the case, why are you traveling and coming to Puttaparthi? Stay in your home only, Swami says and pats him on the back. You know, it was so beautiful, like... It is, I feel it is typically what is happening here when Swami, when Krishna is sending Uddhava. Yes, the boys have got something to learn from this elder. But when Swami is being the elder, interact with the boys, it is not that the elder is in a superior position giving to the boys. The boys have something to receive. The elder too has something to receive. That is why Swami creates the interaction. That is what I was referring to. And I was reminded of that because he is like that here. You know, Uddhava has come to Vrindavan and he's thinking that I will try to elevate these Gopikas and Gopalas so that they can learn true love for Krishna transcends all boundaries, all barriers because Krishna is eternal. But the Gopikas in their apparent stubbornness to hold on to the form of Krishna are actually teaching him so many lessons in love, in divine love, in pure love. And as Uddhava sees this, he's able to feel that love. He's not able to put it in word, but he's able to feel that love. In fact, you know, Swami writes that in the Bhagavata Vahini and in another discourse where Swami is narrating this whole episode, Swami tells how the Gopikas respond to Uddhava, telling Uddhava, we don't want the formless one. We find complete fulfillment in laughing with, crying with this form. We don't want. Don't talk to us about the formless one at all. We will hold on to the form and we find everything that we need there. You know, the way the Gopikas speak, Uddhava is able to perceive the truth that he is not needed there at all. It is not like the Gopikas are complaining that we have pain. They are enjoying that infinite bliss even in that pain of missing Krishna. That is when Uddhava gets to realize the kind of devotion and love that the Gopikas have. In fact, the Gopikas take him around, you know, they take him around Vrindavan and Gokula. They take him to the Govardhanagiri, that mountain which Krishna held up. Have we discussed the episode of the Govardhanagiri?
Right, I think we did in the initial this one.
So that is the venue where that whole episode has taken place, where the humbling of Indra, Lord Indra, when he poured down torrents of rain. And when Uddhava visits that place, he is able to feel every tree, every rock, everything over there, every blade of grass, every animal there shedding tears in pining for Krishna. The amount of pining that is present there, he is able to feel it, and it is said that he sees that rocks are shedding tears, the leaf tips have water drops at them in the middle of the day, in the afternoon. So they are not dew drops. They are the teardrops of the trees missing Krishna. And when Uddhava is witness to this extraordinary pining for Krishna, he is able to feel so much love. As per the traditional Bhagavatam, you know, it goes that though Uddhava tells Krishna there that, Krishna, I cannot stay without you, I will be missing you, I will go there for a day and come back. It is said that so lost is he that he stays on at Vrindavan for 6 months. That is the kind of experience Uddhava has.
Right, absolutely. I mean, that's the beauty of, you know, in many ways, the gap between the intellectual understanding and the experience. Because if you actually go into Vedanta, if you really see read about Advaita, it speaks of this kind of a state, where at every moment you are able to operate from a level of understanding which is more than just the, you know, the worldly level of likes and dislikes. This is what I want to do, this is what I don't like to do. And in that sense, you know, Uddhava was seeing something, he was seeing a state which these Gopikas had reached, which probably even as an Advaitin, even as a Vedantin, he was probably looking to reach. And it was reached through love. It was reached through this, you know, madness of attraction towards Krishna. And this is a thing which will happen so many times, like that incident which you narrated, the conversation. There was another very famous oft-quoted episode where when Swami used to call students to Trayi and they used to be running like mad people, and Swami would many times stand in the entrance of Trayi and say, "The mad horses," Swami would say. And that's how, I mean, thundering sounds would come the way boys would run. And apparently on one particular day they knocked down an elderly gentleman who was very upset with that. He said, you know, how can you be so indisciplined in Swami's presence and all that. So grumbling, he came and sat in Trayi Vrindavan, and that day Swami looked at him and said, would you like to speak to the boys? Give some advice to boys, he said. So literally, you know, Swami,
the opportunity, you know,
opportunity
would have loved
was given to him at the most, you know, opportune moment. So he got up and he said, no, discipline is very important for Swami and all that. He gave a big discourse. At the end of it, apparently Swami spoke. And Swami said, which is actually a very, very important thing. You know, sometimes we are too eager to ripen fast, I sometimes feel. You know, we are so desperate to go into that omnipresent Swami mode, or we get so desperate to get there that we don't ripen properly. Because Swami is saying, you know, how many things that you crave for in life? In your childhood, you crave for so many things. In your youth, you crave for so many things. When you start earning, you crave for so many things. How often in these many births that you go through in this journey, do you have this opportunity to crave for God? to run after God. And unfortunately, even that is a small phase in our life. You know, the way we ran when we were students, probably we can't do now, or you know,
we don't do now.
Most of the students actually graduate even when Swami is there. You know, they go on with their life, they have their career. How many births we would have probably, you know, waited for that one moment where we could run for Swami, or crave for Swami, or cry for Swami, and Swami allowing us to do that. You know, that's even more. You can always run for Swami, but you should be allowed to do that. And Swami was saying that this is an opportunity which is so very grand. Sometimes in that desperation to show that we are learning Swami's message, I think we probably miss a couple of steps and we leap forward, which is not necessarily, you know, necessary indeed. And, you know, even as listening to this Uddhava episode which Swami narrated, I came across this wonderful letter which Swami had written to students in 1976, actually, which is about the same episode, but there's a beautiful twist to it, the way Swami writes it. I'll read out. When that part comes, I think we'll be able to make out. Swami writes in that letter, this is a letter dated 7th January 1976. Swami says, "My dear boys, accept my love. Really, there is no comparison to Gopi's love. Gopi's love stands alone above every other kind of devotion. When Krishna left Vrindavan and went to Mathura, in the brackets, or Parthi, the agony of the gopis was very great. Krishna, coming to know of it, sent Uddhava, his friend, to console them. When the gopis saw Uddhava, they crowded around him and asked, 'How is my Krishna? When is my Krishna coming?' Uddhava said, 'Krishna, in brackets, or Sai, has sent me to give you some advice as to how you can realize the Atman who is pervading everywhere, and thereby know that you and Krishna, who is the Atman, are one, and that you have no reason to feel his separation. Krishna is within you. He is not merely a form. He is your own Atman.' Listening to these words, the gopis replied, 'We do not want your philosophy. We are not at all interested in it. We want Krishna, in brackets, Sai, the beautiful being whom we adore, love and worship. Without him, we are utterly miserable. You can keep the knowledge of Atman for yourself. We will have nothing to do with it. We will have him alone, our adored one.' The last paragraph, Swami writes, 'Boys, their hearts were aflame, their eyes were filled with tears, and they were silent. In this Vrindavan, there are no gopis. They are not feeling like that. Your Sai Krishna is always with you. You are not realizing this. What can I do, my dear boys? Be happy.'" I mean, one beautiful thing about this letter, it is dual. You know, one way Swami is ending the letter by saying, "I'm always with you, realize that." But Swami is also saying that, "But you're not pining for me."
You're not pining.
Right? So I think that is the beautiful message. It is not that you give up the idea that Swami is always with you. You hold on to that belief and have firm faith in that. But at the same time, don't stop pining for him. Don't start craving for him also.
You know, in fact, in the Bhagavata Vahini, Swami, I feel, describes how actually with this pining and craving, you can make God to present himself there. Because it's not direct, but this is how I read it, you know. Because Swami writes that the way Uddhava felt when he came to Vrindavan, it was so filled with Krishna. In fact, Swami writes that it was more Krishna consciousness than when he was actually physically with Krishna in Mathura. In fact, Uddhava starts feeling very bad, thinking that how I have not utilized my time when I am staying with Krishna. Krishna is this, you know. Actually, though he is staying with Krishna, he gets to know who Krishna is when he visits Vrindavan. He realizes, oh my God, this is Krishna. And I'm staying with Krishna and I'm not utilizing it at all. And as said earlier, though he had come on a proposed visit for one day, he stays on for 6 months. Because he, in his heart, he is not wanting to leave this Vrindavana. Because it's only in Vrindavana that the true meaning of Krishna is learnt. In all other places, you can get deluded as to what Krishna is. And the separation that he is feeling from these true devotees, it is feeling same, if not more intense than the separation he felt while leaving Krishna. So, you know, that's what Swami writes in the Bhagavata Vahini. Swami writes, there is really no distinction between Gopi and Gopala, the Bhakta and Bhagavan. The hearts of the gopis had got transformed into altars where Krishna was installed. Their inner cravings had been satiated only by drinking the nectar of the Krishna Rasa. And that is why Uddhava managed to stay 6 months. Not managed, he wanted and he stayed there for 6 months because he felt Krishna there. Isn't it so paradoxical that the intense pining because of absence of Krishna has actually created Krishna there, so much so that an intellectual, a jnani, who has come to advise and rush back to his Krishna in Mathura, feels Krishna's presence and stays on there. That is the paradox, but that is a magic. Where there is intense pining, the Lord automatically gets created there. And anybody is able to feel that presence of Swami, is able to feel the presence of God in the actual physical absence also. Because as Swami writes, there is no distinction between the Gopi and the Gopala, the Bhakta and the Bhagavan. On that note, dear listeners, we will take a little break. Don't go away anywhere, because on the other side of the break, we will continue this journey of Uddhava and we will conclude that possibly. And we will go into a few more interesting episodes and narratives of Krishna's life.
Oh, Mitrama, Prana. Mitrama, oh Mitrama,
ಆನಂದ ಪರವಸ చేరగరానా, నా ప్రియతమ చలికాడిని చేరగరానా. ప్రియ సఖా మాధవ ప్రాణ సఖా కేశవ, ప్రియ సఖా మాధవ ప్రాణ సఖా కేశవ, కనులారా నిన్ను జోచితిని, కనులారా నిన్ను జోచితిని, కనులారా నిన్ను జోచితిని, కనులారా జోచితిని.
వెల్కమ్ బ్యాక్ డియర్ లిసనర్స్. వి వర్ టాకింగ్ అబౌట్ ఎ వెరీ బ్యూటిఫుల్ ఎపిసోడ్ ఇన్ ది భాగవతం. స్వామి రైట్స్ అబౌట్ వేర్ ఉద్ధవ ఇస్ సెంట్ టు గోపికాస్ టు ఇన్ హిస్ వే ట్రై హిస్ వే ఆఫ్ ఎక్స్ప్లెయినింగ్ టు దెమ్ హౌ కృష్ణ ఇస్ ఆల్వేస్ విత్ దెమ్. బట్ ఇన్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ హీ గోస్ టు దెమ్ అండ్ హీ అండర్స్టాండ్స్ ద మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ వాట్ ఇట్ ఈస్ టు హ్యావ్ కృష్ణ ఆల్వేస్ విత్ యూ. యు నో, వన్ వే హీస్ థింకింగ్ దట్ దే ఆర్ పైనింగ్, బట్ త్రూ దట్ పైనింగ్ యాక్చువల్లీ కృష్ణ ఇస్ విత్ దెమ్ మోర్ దాన్ ద పర్సన్ హూ ఇస్ ఇంటెలెక్చువలీ థింకింగ్ దట్ కృష్ణ ఇస్ విత్ అస్. And I think that is the beauty, and how very beautifully Swami says that going away from Krishna's presence, he actually finds Krishna there in their yearning and pining.
In fact, Swami writes, I think it's best we read out his own words. You know, Swami writes that Uddhava laments actually when he witnesses all this. He says, alas, I have laid waste all these years of my life. Having been in the cool, comforting presence of Krishna himself for so long, I have not gained access to his love and his glory. My heart is not yet illumined by even a fraction of the devotion and love that these gopis have for the Lord. Verily, if one has to take birth, one should be born as a gopa or a gopi. Why be born otherwise and live a life sans meaning and significance? And then he goes on to say, if I don't have luck to be born as a gopa or a gopi, let me become a green floral bower in Vrindavan or a jasmine creeper there. Or if I don't merit that fortune, let me at least grow as a blade of grass on the lawns that have been frequented by the gopas, gopis and Krishna. You know, Swami writes that Uddhava lamented in this manner and yearned in devoted anguish. His heart was filled with that yearning. In fact, he was saved by that very anguish. What a powerful statement that is.
Right. So beautiful. In fact, you know, it's typically, I think, those of us who have been fortunate to have a few moments or a few months or years or days or whatever it is to be in the physical presence, I think this is our plight. You know, Swami was there in front of us. Swami was there for the taking. I recall a very powerful incident which happened, a very small thing. At the end of a discourse, Swami was talking, and, you know, sometimes it happens. Towards the end of the discourse, Swami starts specifically addressing the students who are sitting in front of him. And during that discourse, at the end of it, Swami suddenly said, students, what do you want? Swami said. And I was surprised because the whole block, almost in one voice and chorus, they shouted Swami.
Mm. Right?
And you know, you imagine that scene, Swami standing there in front of the discourse table and saying, what do you want? And boys are all in one voice saying Swami.
It was instantaneously
such a thrilling thing. And literally Swami threw his hands open and Swami said, I am ready, but you are not able to. Right? Literally, I mean, that is exactly our plight. We knew Swami was there in front of us, but how do you get him? And Swami is giving the answer. It is through this anguish of that yearning for Swami more and more. Nothing more will give you. Even a jnani like Uddhava had to get it through that way.
You know, though not exactly like Uddhava, Uddhava-ish kind of experience I've had, you know, where I, you know, this, I'm sure you know very well this concept of the waiting boys, because they are the ones who have completed their education, but they want to be with Swami, so they're just waiting for Swami's word. Having been a seasoned waiting boy yourself, I'm sure you know it. But I used to, you know, dread being a waiting boy because I felt I may not have the patience. And that was one side. But the other side, I also used to feel a kind of, you know, like how Uddhava would look down upon the Gopikas, in the thinking that they're illiterate, they don't know. I also used to think like that, you know, all said and done, in a way, these waiting boys are, you know, wasting of their time. They should directly go and be more aggressive, active. Because, like you yourself, Prem, very passive. Not even if Swami asks what you want, you will not tell what you want, because you want that also to be decided by Swami. You know, that kind of apparent passiveness, I used to think of it as, you know, something that has to be something that the waiting boys need to be educated and be pulled out of, just like Uddhava felt that the Gopikas had to be pulled out of. So, you know, it teaches a very important lesson that it's only the Lord who knows. The Lord is the perfect judge. And interestingly, dear listeners, you know, this episode, though we have passed through this chapter multiple times, we have missed out, and it is today that's coming out.
You know, going back to, as I was just telling you when that song was playing out, many times some of the students would go through this, especially students who have lived in Swami's presence through the school, who have studied through the primary school. Invariably, I think this must have been Swami's instruction itself. Swami would suggest that many of the boys who studied in school from very young age would be put in Vrindavan rather than continuing their undergraduate in the Prashanthi Nilayam campus.
All the old boys.
Right, most of these school boys would land up in Vrindavan. And invariably, there'll be a ruckus at that time. Many batches, I think even my batch, the batch before that, they would go and tell Swami that, Swami, we don't want to go to Vrindavan. We want to be here. We want to stay in Patti itself. Because, I mean, who would want to miss that opportunity of having Swami's darshan every day? Because you go to Vrindavan, you don't see Swami almost for the entire year, except when you come for any festival or Swami comes there during the summer.
You know, having spent just 2 years, I mean, it was not like I studied here from first standard, but even just 11th and 12th, I myself felt, no, Swami, I don't want to go to Vrindavan, because, you know, it doesn't even make logical sense. Why am I coming here? It's not because of the education, not because Puttaparthi is a leading central city in the whole world, nothing like that. It's just because you want to be with Swami. And you want to be with Swami, so you're ready to, you know, I'm sure there are many, many students who have given up going for an engineering or going for a medical. You know, these are courses, professional courses, which are valued highly in India, at least. So they would give up that simply so that they can stay with Swami. In fact, they would even decide to take up pure sciences, BSc, BCom, instead of going for professional courses, simply because they want to stay with Swami. And having done that, now if you are told, good, you got this, but go to Vrindavan, it doesn't make sense at all. Right. Swami, I gave up all that so I can be with you. Don't send me to Vrindavan.
Right. But many of those students who went through this process, you know, when they started crying and they went to Vrindavan, they literally had this very experience. In going to Vrindavan, they actually found Swami. They became more dearer to Swami at that moment when they were in Vrindavan, because I think Swami is quite aptly named at Vrindavan, because there's that yearning for Swami is so, that air is saturated with that yearning and pining for Swami. And when Swami comes, it's festival season. There's no doubt about that, the kind of interactions we would have. But the whole year used to be a build up to that. And, you know, when you read this part of the chapter, you know, how much more encouraging it is for us today, because this is probably the message which we need today. Swami is saying that if your focus is on me, if your desire, if your craving has been placed on me, then even in the yearning you can find Swami. In fact, in the yearning you can find Swami more. But if you have placed your desire on anything else and Swami becomes the via means to achieve that, then there will be only disappointment and probably you will go in search of the same thing somewhere else.
When you say you can achieve Swami more through the yearning, that is what is evident even in that Radha Bhakti drama that Swami writes, you know. Radha is possibly among the Gopikas also, if you consider all the Gopikas and Gopalas are lucky ones to spend time with Krishna. Among them, the crest jewel among them possibly is Radha, because Radha is supposed to be the best friend of Krishna. And, you know, and when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, everyone expects, like, you know, it's almost like other Gopikas take solace from the fact that, you know, at least it's not as bad for us as it is for Radha, you know, because they know that is the kind of bonding that exists between Radha and Krishna. So if I'm a Gopika, I'm thinking, oh God, Swami is leaving and going, how will I survive? I'll say that, okay, fine, my situation is at least better. It's not as worse as it is for Radha. You know, that is the kind of, if you can say, attachment or connection that existed between Radha and Krishna. But when Krishna goes, and, you know, Swami in that Radha Bhakti drama writes about, finally when Krishna remembers Radha and comes back to Radha, at that time Radha actually tells Krishna that she has no need for his form, which is amazing, because by the absence of Krishna and her intense yearning and pining. She says that how can, you know, she gives many analogies. She says that the moon shines, the sun shines in every pot of water. But can that pot of water tell that the sun belongs to me? In that way, Krishna shines in everywhere. And so she says, whether it's a pot of water, the tree, the fish, the elephant, the creepers, everywhere, the bumblebee, everything is Krishna. And she begins to experience that Krishna. And she doesn't get that experience because of her going behind the formless or because of her Advaita, you know. She becomes an Advaitin, she becomes one because of her intense yearning for that beautiful and bewitching form and that beautiful name of Krishna. You know, that is what gets achieved by intense craving. And much later, if we come down, we have Mirabai, who attained all that Radha attained by living in a time when Krishna physically was not there at all, you know. Mirabai is like a modern day figure, you know, she is just 400 years old compared to Radha, who is more than 4000 years old. But Mirabai also attained, and that is testimony to the truth that yearning is the most important when it comes to devotion towards a name and a form, because with that yearning everything can be achieved even if that form is not present. But without that yearning, even if the form is present, things would be missed.
I recall another beautiful incident which happened in Vrindavan. I'm sure we must have narrated this before, of a student whom Swami had asked him to speak in Trai Vrindavan. And I think the student had just come back from his vacation. It was during the summertime, towards the end of the summer vacation. He had come back from his summer vacation, and he was narrating a couple of incidents where he felt Swami's presence when he had gone to his hometown. Right, he was saying that how Swami is everywhere, and so the essence of that entire talk was Swami's omnipresence. So he said, you know, Swami is sitting here, but he's always with us. Wherever we go, he is there, and all that he said. So the talk ended, and we know that invariably after the talk, there'll be a small interaction between whoever spoke and Swami would crack a few jokes and, you know, say something. So a conversation was happening after this talk, and in the course of that talk, this boy said, Swami, when will you come to Parthi? Please come soon. Because he was doing his master's, so he had to go to Parthi, but Swami will be in Vrindavan for a few more weeks before he travels to Parthi. And immediately, you know, Swami said, hey, just now you spoke about Swami's omnipresence, and now you're telling come to Parthi. Right? And the boys were sitting around, they were telling that they could see the delight in Swami's face because he had caught him red-handed, you know. You say something and but you don't believe in it, you say something else after that. So Swami said, see, the boys are like this only, they are only platform heroes and all that Swami's dialogues. They say something but they don't do it and all of these things Swami was saying. So this boy was quiet because what will you tell? Then, but Swami was not letting go. Again and again Swami was turning to him and said, tell, why did you tell like this? Tell, why did you tell like this? And eventually, you know, that boy looked at Swami and said, Swami, because Swami's presence is sweeter than Swami's omnipresence.
Wow.
Mm. And when he said that, Swami actually became speechless. Because Swami literally started blushing, because I think that is what it is. You know, when you say that Swami is omnipresent, yes, nobody can deny that. I don't think even if we are the most knowledgeable, we can prove that wrong. Swami's omnipresence is always there. But at the same time, you can always crave for that presence, because that presence has something else. It's magical. And for those who have experienced it, you know, even those who have not seen Swami or not been in Swami's presence, the reason why we read the Bhagavatam is for that. You know, this is what it is to be in the presence of the Lord, and you crave for that.
That is the reason why we read all experiences, incidents of anybody with Swami. And somehow, I'm sure many will agree to this, that when people narrate experiences with Bhagwan, those experiences range from the one in the present to the one in the omnipresence. The omnipresence one definitely opens our mouth in awe and makes us wonder and makes us realize His glory. But the ones that thrill us into smiles and laughter and sweetness are the ones of His presence, because they are so sweet, they are so climactic, they are so anticlimactic, everything. I mean, they are so unique. So all said and done, the beauty of the form is forever. You know, a thing of beauty is a joy forever, they say, and that is what it is. The form of the Lord, when it comes, the avatar, it is a thing of beauty, and therefore it is a joy forever. Even after that form is gone, we can recreate the joy and and the thrill that we felt in the presence of the form by just reliving these episodes and stories. You know, in this context, just I think this has also been narrated many times, but the episode where, you know, when Dr. Ravi Kumar, who is the, currently the Vrindavan warden, when he was a student, he was doing his doctorate from Krishnadevaraya University, I think.
Doctorate he did in our university. I think
before that, yeah, his master's he was doing there. And so,
SK University,
Shri Krishnadevaraya University. So, in Anantapur. So, every weekend he would come to Prashantilyam for darshan. One weekend when he had come, Swami called him in for an interview and there were others also. And another example of like that student where the Swami within inspires a beautiful answer which conveys a profound truth. Swami asked him, why you are coming every weekend here? And he said, Swami, I am coming for darshan. Then Swami asked, why is it that you want darshan? He said, Swami, I want darshan because it gives me bliss. Swami asked, does it give you bliss or does it give you happiness? He said, Swami, it gives me bliss. Swami said, what is the difference between happiness and bliss? And pat came his reply. He said, Swami, when I am feeling very hungry, at that time if somebody offers jamun to me, gulab jamun, I will eat it, relish it and enjoy and I will feel very happy. Swami, 10 years down the line, if I am feeling very hungry and at that time, if somebody reminds me of the gulab jamun that I ate 10 years back, it will not satiate my hunger, I will not feel joy. On the contrary, I will feel pain, Swami, because I am not having that gulab jamun that I had. But Swami, I am seeing you, I am having your darshan, I am feeling immense joy now. 10 years later, if I am not in your presence, and at that point in time, if I look back and think of this episode that is happening now, I am sure, Swami, I will feel the same joy that I am feeling now. That is why, Swami, having your darshan is bliss, while all other things are happiness. And I don't think Ravi Kumar sir realized the poignancy of the episode, of the answer that he gave to Swami at that point in time, because today it is a story that we can hold on to and feel the joy, because now that is what we are doing. We are just going back and reliving the beautiful stories of Swami's life. And though at times one may feel a little sad or a little bad that they were not there to witness it, even that sadness and feeling bad actually increases the yearning and pining for the Lord, which results in actually we getting our Lord in our own manner.
And so beautifully Swami writes in this one sentence, which probably we should read out, where Swami says, you know, there is really no distinction between Gopi and Gopala, the Bhakta and Bhagwan. The hearts of the gopis had got transformed into altars
where he was
installed. Their inner cravings were satiated by drinking the nectar of Krishna Rasa.
Exactly, that's what we read out once, oh, 10 minutes back. No, it is so beautiful that you can read it out again and again. That is the beautiful. In fact, we had made a reference to this earlier, but it's worth recalling again about how Swami writes that everything for these gopikas became Krishna. And Swami gives the example of a gopika by name Sugana, who saw Krishna even in the flame. It was practiced those days that in the evening when lamps are lit, all the lamps are lit from the house of the village head person, and it was Nanda, that is foster father for Bhagwan Krishna. So from his home, all the gopikas would come to light their lamp, and when they would come, you know, it is said that Sugana saw Krishna even in that flame of the lamp, because of which she embraces that and her sari is on fire, but she is lost in bliss. Imagine your clothes are burning, but you are in bliss because you feel that is Krishna embracing you. That is the kind of experiences that gopikas had, that intensity because of which they were able to create Krishna even in the absence of Krishna. That's why it becomes very special for us, especially in these days when we are also in the situation, irrespective of where we are, whether in Prashantinilyam or Vrindavan or Detroit or Michigan or Japan, wherever, there is that physical absence which gives us this opportunity to yearn and crave for that physical presence, which we can learn from the gopikas. And Swami writes it that it's not as if only the gopikas, that is the gopis, well, that the gopalas and the gopas, they also had such intense experiences. Possibly we'll go into that next week, dear listeners, when we continue the Bhagavata Vahini Satsang, because the time now in our studios is 1:56. It is time for the afternoon satsang to come to a close. We will end this satsang with a beautiful song, on the other side of which you will be greeted with Brother Chandu with his segment Love to Love. This afternoon satsang has also been Love to Love because it has been filled with the love of the devotee towards the Lord and that of the Lord towards the devotee. We will leave you as we offer this at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan. As always, you can write to us at listener@radiosai.org with your thoughts, feedback, feelings, anything that you wish. Thank you. Jai Sai Ram.
प्याला भेजा पिया